Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Hey, what's going on, Rip City? This is the Trailing Blazers podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. You can find us on Twitter at Trailing Blazers. You can find us pretty much everywhere, iTunes and anywhere else for your podcast needs. As always, I am joined by my co-host and good friend, Taylor Danforth. And while I may sound like death, Taylor may bring a little more life to the podcast this week.
Maybe. We'll see. You sound good, Dan. I like this newfound voice of yours.
Yes, the nasally, god-awful congested sickness that I've had for many days now that have forced us to postpone the podcast. I actually have a voice now, so that's nice. I've gone
improvement
from the sounding like the three-pack-a-day smoker to just partially congested and still pounding, I don't know, four different types of medication, chloroseptic sore throat spray, some Halls. Yeah, no, we're doing pretty good around these parts.
Dude, I ran into somebody the other day, and they were sick. And I'm like, yeah, I don't believe in medicine. And they were just so miserable. I was like, yeah, well, I do believe in medicine, and it makes me feel better. So I'm going to go ahead and take it.
Yeah, I'm not that much of a masochist. I don't hate myself that much.
Right. If the guy told me
heroin would fix what I have right now, I'd be like,
That's exactly.
What's one hit, right?
Right, exactly. You definitely consider it. This guy's like, no, you know, it's in the long term, it's bad for you. It's like, dude, if it takes a year or two off my life when I'm 75, 80 years old and I feel better now, sign me up for that deal.
Yeah, this week of hell, no, I'm totally cool with erasing this from existence.
Dude, so I am in Hollywood right now, and they're setting up for the Oscars, and I was wearing my Rip City hat. And it's a gray, but you got the red with the Rip City, and then it says Portland on the back. Mm-hmm. It was probably 1 a.m, and I'm walking. It's just really sketchy part of Hollywood, and I'm, you know,
let's go ahead and
big guy.
Everybody else, every part of Hollywood is sketchy.
It's just so sketchy, man. And I was coming back from the gym, and I just wandered into this just a bad situation. There's three rather large black men with guns, and I walk by, and they go, "Are you a blood?" I was like, am I a blood? Do I look like? And for those people that have no idea, so there's the Crips and the Bloods and a bunch of gangs. And so a blood is a gang, and they wear red. And so I was wearing a Rip City hat. And so they asked if I was a blood. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Answering this question correctly is going to determine how this situation goes next. And I go, nah, man, I'm not a blood. I'm just, you know. And they go, oh, okay. Well, are you in a gang? Like, do I look like, and I was joking. I was like, do I look like I'm in a gang? And they laughed and they thought it was funny. And like, nah, man, you're cool. But where are you from? I was like, I'm from Portland. And they go, oh, they hate the N-word up there. Yeah, they curb stomp them up there. I said, yeah, that's why I came down here, man. That's why I came down to Los Angeles. They go, oh, word, cool. All right, man, have a good night. And I was just like, oh my gosh. And I got the hell out of there.
Time
so I'm
to
alive,
get
Dan.
Home.
I'm alive, and I'm doing a podcast with you.
It's time
I'm
when Rip
never
City
wearing
your life.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And I don't think I'm going to wear this Rip City hat for a while. I'm just going to kind of cool the jets, on the Rip City hat.
And people wonder why when they ask me, like, "Hey, would you ever head back to Southern California? Would you ever go back home?" I just shake my head very slowly. No,
dude, it's a madhouse.
I love the weather. I love a lot of the people, and I love the food. Just about everything else, I want no part of.
Yeah, it's crazy.
No thanks. All right, so let's get into some Blazers stuff here. So we just wrapped up the trade deadline, and Portland came away with their one deal, moving Mason Plumlee in a second round pick for Yusuf Nurkic and a first round pick. What are your initial takeaways, both short-term, long-term, and how it all kind of came together?
Yeah, Dan, I was talking to another Blazer fan the other day, and I I'm glad we can talk about this Nurkic deal, because I think it's a good deal. And I think a lot of the deals that Neil O'Shea has done can be considered, in, like, as he likes to say, a vacuum, a pretty good deal. The issue that I have, I think, with this Nurkic deal, and I guess a lot of other deals, is that it doesn't do enough to make any kind of significant difference for the Blazers long term. Is it the right move to flip Plumlee for a pick in Nurkic? Yes, all day long. Of course, that's what you do. But I just feel like in the Neil O'Shea tenure, the Nurkic deal is symbolic of kind of his whole time here. And that is a smart deal that probably will work, but it doesn't really contribute to anything long term of any kind of significance. It's just he's just kind of like a dinkin' and dunkin'. And like you said, kick the can's a perfect description. It's a great deal, and Nurkic he played amazing yesterday in Orlando. I mean, and you saw a couple different looks from the Blazers offensively, a couple different wrinkles that I think are going to be pretty good. But again, it's just like, yes. Yeah, when I say wrinkles, I mean of like a post-up game. So it was great to see. He was efficient. 12 boards, 12 points, amazing, right? If you get any kind of anything close to a double-double from him every single night, you're just loving life down in the post. But I guess my larger point is I'm getting frustrated with these little value deals and nothing of significance that seriously propels this team forward.
No, I mean, it makes sense. If you're looking at this team and how it's kind of been put together and how it's formulated, there are Damian and CJ who are star-level players who, if moved, are either going to get you a cornucopia of draft picks or a lateral-type movement for a player, unless you're willing to include more and more on top of that. The other guys are basically guys that Portland signs or drafts or however you want to look at it. Basically buy low, sell high.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been pretty good at that in the short term.
Harkless is an example
exactly.
of that,
Harkless,
right?
Mason Plumlee's one of those guys. Remember, he was a backup behind mm-hmm. Brooke Lopez in Brooklyn. He's going to get paid. He's going to probably make Allen Crabbe or better money in the open market because the free agents this year aren't that great in this crop. The only downside if you're Mason Plumlee right now is all these teams that had all that cap space this past summer pretty much used it up. They went Trailblazer style with it. It was kind of a use it or lose it situation. So that may limit some of that. But as far as the Blazers are concerned, you look at the guys like Allen Crabbe. He's a second round draft pick and now he's a $17 million man. I mean, that's a credit to the Blazers development staff and to Allen Crabbe. But mm-hmm. if he's worth that much money to the Blazers in a sense, he's not necessarily worth that much in the aggregate. And people can argue this point back and forth that you're worth what the market says you're worth. And if somebody's willing to overpay, it's not necessarily an overpay. It's a market adjustment. If you're looking at this holistically in that, here's what Allen Crabbe is worth if all 30 teams could only pay the same amount. You're probably looking at Allen Crabbe between a $10 and $12 million a year guy. And that makes sense, mm-hmm. right?
Sure. Yeah, I would even go probably 13, 14 in the new CBA.
You could put him in that tier and you wouldn't bat an eye. That extra mm-hmm. $4 or $5 million a year, though, when you stack that up on top of an Evan Turner deal, and Harkless's deal, and Myers-Leonard's deal, and all these deals all coming at the same time, that's when, like you talked about, in a vacuum, an individual deal may not look bad or good or whatever, but it's when you stack all these things up that these little granular level moves where you're kicking the can, well, eventually that can runs into a wall. And that's basically what the situation we find ourselves in right now.
Yeah, I love the Nurkic deal if you are the Blazers and it's, say, the Wesley Matthews, Nick Batum, L.A., Robin Lopez, Damian Lillard team, right? And if you have Plumlee and you're able to flip him for Nurkic, right? Then at that point, maybe that's like they tried to do with the Aflalo.
This is
work,
basically
but
the
Aflalo
deal in reverse, though.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Because instead of sending out a young player and a pick for a veteran,
you're getting
a
young player to pick,
quote unquote, Mason Plumlee, back for the young player in the pick.
Yeah, so value deals. Neil O'Shea is great at, I think, at evaluating draft talent. And I think he's pretty good at these little deals. Where he has failed is in free agency. He's failed in structuring contracts that work for the Blazers long term. And he's failed to get in that final piece. And I don't know where that's going to come from. So, and we can get into this about if Drummond was available for CJ and maybe a couple picks, or I don't know what. I mean, there were a lot of rumors around what deals were available if they could have got Cousins. But there's still a piece or two, like a major piece or two away, like a Paul George type player away that they still need to add on this team. And trading guys when they have assets or trying to position themselves for that, I just don't think he's done a very good job in terms of trading and free agency, which is a large part of what the Blazers are going to have to do based off how they've set up some of their contracts, really.
And that's the thing is that while this Nurkic deal in a vacuum and by itself was a good deal, it was a deal that really had to be made, or some kind of deal had to be made, if they're going to get any kind of return on Mason Plumlee. Now, the crazy thing is...
Yeah, you can't just let him walk.
Yeah, and here's the thing, though, is that there were deals rumored where Portland was the team that Jahlil Okafor was being sat for. He was being sent here. Mm-hmm. What was Portland going to give up in that case? Was it Allen Crabbe?
Crabbe and a pick, maybe?
I mean, was it Crabbe, and Crabbe was going to be... starting in Philly, and he declined the deal, or Neil O'Shea didn't want to go with the deal, or what happened there. The other one is that Mark Stein of ESPN is reporting that, you know, the Blazers were heavily interested in Tyson Chandler, 34-year-old, $13 million a year, 3 years remaining Tyson Chandler.
And that's part of the problem, right? Is that it's just like we're talking Chandler Parsons in the offseason, Tyson Chandler. It's like none of these guys are going to be the difference maker when you're talking about the Blazers long term. I mean, I just don't. There are guys out there that can be difference makers for you. And none of the, at least, I don't know, based off of all of the NBA insiders that I've heard, Woj, Stein, Lowe, Amick, I haven't heard any of those guys mention the Blazers in any sort of significant deal, because it doesn't sound like they're willing to give up Damian or CJ. And if you're not willing to give up those two guys, then you're not going to get anybody significant in return back. And if they're not willing to give up those two, then I guess you have to look to the draft.
And there's where, and that's the case that we're kind of working to right now, is that if you're going to look towards the draft, and Neil O'Shea in his interview with Brooke Olsendam on CSN last week basically said, we're looking towards the draft. If you're looking towards the draft, you need to tank.
You have to. You need to tank, and you need to shed cap space. Like you need to try and maneuver guys, I think, as much as possible to try and work your way up in the draft.
And Festus,
and
Azeli
he's done that with three picks.
I mean, so
right, how can you not move Azeli?
From the sound of it sounds like he was going to Denver, and Denver instead opted to go with Roy Hibbert. And now, here's the thing. Here's where. I don't necessarily excuse Olshay, but mostly because it's a situation he made himself. That's the issue here. But at the same time, you can't force other teams to give you assets in return for your dying contracts or players or whatever it was. Yeah, it'd be great. I mean, I was surprised that Mason Plumlee and a second round pick was able to bring in Nurkic in a first. From all I've heard, basically, is that behind doors, Nurkic was told that he would be moved before the deadline. And so maybe the Blazers got him on the cheap. I figured, and this is something that I discussed with a few other people that work out in Denver, I said, hey, would Mason Plumlee and Noah Vonleh be enough for Nurkic? And they said, yeah, I absolutely think that would be enough. And this is without getting a first-round pick in return. The fact that Mason Plumlee turned into a first-round pick and Nurkic, and it's a first-round pick that's somewhat valuable. It could be anywhere between 18 and 22, 23. So, but when you take
yeah, but again,
like
that goes
that,
back to.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, yeah, but again, that gets back to what are you getting in the draft from 18 to 23, right? Are you getting somebody that's going to be ready in 2 or 3 years to help Damian and CJ go on a title run? Or not even a title run, to be a top four team in the West? Are you really getting somebody in the draft that at that spot? Probably not.
No, but it's
and that doesn't mean you can't package
up.
That.
That's it. Yes. And that's the thing is that the Blazers cupboard, as far as assets go, as real tangible assets go, was very bare. Alan Crabb, if you're still on a rookie deal, is worth something. Mo Harkless on Mo Harkless on his current deal is worth something. Ed Davis has got some value to a team that's missing a big guy down the stretch. I mean, but the thing is, like, they have niche players that are up and down their roster as far as value. They don't have league-wide value. Like, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum have league-wide value. Yeah, there's 20 teams that would love to have those guys, right?
Yeah. I think I know I sound salty. I'm just super frustrated because I've followed this team for the better part of my whole life, and I've covered them in the media capacity for the last 10 years or so. And I'm just, what's the plan, Dan? Like, what are they doing? Because I can't, for the life of me, figure out what Neil O'Shea is doing.
I think they package it up. I'm almost certain that they package it up and sold that last year's magic in a bottle was sustainable. And the fact that they went that way and that they believed their own hype was a really, really bad move. Not just in hindsight. This is something I was saying in July and August. So everybody who's wondering, you can go back and hear the old podcast when everybody was calling me Negative Nancy and the pessimist and all that kind of stuff. But I just didn't think that the ceiling for this team was that high. And it's not necessarily a knock on them. It's just talent-wise, they're not able to compete with the big dogs in the league. I mean, when you look at Golden State, they're a once-in-a-generation team. I mean, it's just the way it is. So the way I look at it now, as far as going forward, and this is what I thought should have been done last year, because I was talking about tanking last season. They need to tank. They need to get more young, sustainable talent. By sustainable, I mean contract-wise, dollar-wise. If the Blazers somehow wandered into a top-three pick and Josh Jackson, the small forward from Kansas, was available, you're talking about my dream scenario. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a 6'8", 6'9", player who has shown offensive capabilities but has the tools and ability to be a premier lockdown defender in the NBA. You're basically looking at a guy that looks like Kawhi Leonard when he came out of college. And I know people get wrapped up in comparisons and all that kind of stuff, but that's the kind of guy Portland needs. They need that. Everybody talks about Portland needs a big. Yeah, getting a big is great, and maybe Nurkic ends up being that guy. But what they need more than anything is a two-way player. They need somebody who can lock somebody down on one end and create and score on the other consistently. I love Alvaro Camino.
Yeah.
But he's just not consistent. Yeah, he's not a consistent offensive option. I mean, if he's one of your first guys off the bench, you're doing really well. Because you can just run guys out there to defenders. If you had Jackson, Aminu, and Harkless, where you could interchange those guys 2, 3, and 4, I mean, that'd be fun. That's a lot of length, a lot of versatility you can put out there. That's the way Portland has to go, though.
There's no other option. But I'll go back to remember the offseason last year. The general sentiment that we talked about, and I think a lot of people talked about, is when you had your restricted free agents and went about signing them, everybody at the time thought, and correctly so, oh, yeah, of course, you bring them back on their restricted deals. That way you can trade them later for pieces. You can move Myers. You can move Crabb. You can move Harkless. That's why you bring all those guys back, is because you can go with their rights. You can go over the cap and pay the luxury. You've got the space. So why wouldn't you? Don't let them walk for free, sign them, and then deal them later, right? I mean, that's what everybody was talking about.
The consolidation trades, yeah.
Yeah, the justification for bringing those guys back and paying them that was not that they're long-term options, but that they're assets for the Blazers to try and move and to maneuver. And that hasn't happened yet. So now you're in this weird spot of being in the 9th, 10th spot, potentially like a game or two out of the 8 seed, and trying to compete for the 8 seed. And then you still have all these bloated, inflated contracts where you're going to pay the luxury tax. So Paul Allen's going to have to pay the luxury tax this year, a lot of it. And then they may end up at the 8 seed and miss the lottery. Like, that's what I'm talking about, like a plan. If the plan is we're going to get better through the draft, then do everything you can at the trade deadline to set yourself up for that. And that means trading away some guys and taking back some pieces or some friendly contracts, and then being able to get the best draft pick possible. And I don't feel like they did that at all. They're just in this weird in-between stage that is just infuriating as a fan, man.
And the thing is that there has to be two to tango. And then maybe there just wasn't an option out there that made sense for Allen Crabbe. And you got to remember,
because do you believe that?
Well, because he's an RFA.
Philly wouldn't take Allen Crabbe?
I don't know what the deal was there. And that's the thing, is I just don't know what
the costs were. Doesn't matter. I guess, let me ask you that. But Crabbe can,
well, here's the thing. As an RFA in that first year that was brought back, Crabbe has first refusal rights.
He sure does, yeah.
So he can say no.
So it's possible he did.
Yeah.
It's possible he did.
Maybe Philly went from one of those places where it was rumored he wanted to go to, and now all of a sudden, with whatever reason, he decides, you know what? No, I don't want to move midseason. If you want to deal me there, deal me in the summer.
Mm. And I know it takes two to tango, and it's possible that nobody wanted Myers, and nobody wanted Crabbe, and nobody wanted Harkless.
I bet you there's people out there that wanted Harkless, Davis, and Aminu.
Then do a deal, right?
I think they're worth more to this franchise right now because of all the other bloated contracts. Those guys on those controlled deals are worth their weight in gold. Got to remember, Alfred Camino, I think, is making like $7 million.
Yeah, Ed Davis is making nothing. Like Myers is 10.
And Myers is actually under 10 in this first year. He's at like 9.6. Same with Mo. So those guys are really... They're old level MLE and new level MLE. You've got, you know, four rotation players essentially that you've got on really good deals. And that's why I don't think you'll see Portland in any hurry to get rid of any of those guys unless it brought back a legitimate asset. Like, you heard of Houston talking about how they wanted to add another $10 or $12 million a year guy, but the only thing they're willing to give back is an expiring contract. Do you want to just give away Mo Harkless or Myers Leonard just for an expiring contract just to be done with it?
Yeah, I think I do.
You would?
I think so, yeah, man. I think I do. At this point, I really do. I think I would. But that's just me personally. I understand why Neil O'Shea wouldn't. I understand why the organization wouldn't. I completely get it. But I am at the point, just me personally as a fan, where I want just kind of as much of a reset and try to move forward and unpack all of this kind of mess that Neil O'Shea has created. I just feel like it's a big mess, and that trying to untangle that and unpack it is just going to lead them. And I know I sound so negative, but I'm so frustrated with this team.
Welcome to the club.
Mainly Neil O'Shea. It's just like, oh my gosh, you created this disaster of a situation, and the way out of it seems impossible. Like, and when I mean way out of it, I mean a legitimate path forward to get a top four seed in the West. I just don't see it happening with this current. When you've got Evan Turner's contract, you've got Crabbe's contract.
You need to add talent.
You have Myers and Azili. You've got to find a way to get.
That's literally the only way this is happening. Unless Maurice Harkless turns into a transcendent two way player. That's, you know, a multi-time all-star.
But that's not going to happen.
No, and that's not a knock against Maurice. He is what he is. He's a good player. But he's not. Portland needs a legitimate all-star right now. Or they need a guy who's just loaded with potential. And where do you get those guys if you're Portland? In the draft.
Trade of the draft. Yep.
I mean, it's
Yeah, so thing. I would do everything I could to try and position myself for the draft. And I know they've done that with three first-round picks. But you've got to maximize those. Now that you've got those three picks, you have to maximize them. And again, I don't feel like they're setting themselves up to maximize those three picks, because that's the path forward. The answer, like all this negativity that I have, the answer is the draft. The answer moving forward is the draft. So if you can figure out a way to move up and get a top five or six pick, or to
for everybody
have,
else out there, this is Taylor trying to say tank without actually saying tank, because he's so vehemently against tanking.
I mean, you have to, right? At this point,
I mean, you and I have had this discussion for 2 years, And I've been on this train leading it for a while, man. It's just, it's a talent and equity right now. They just don't have enough of it at the top end.
And would you have traded CJ?
Not now. Not now.
No, I would. What about for Drummond?
No, not now. Not with the way everything is right now. With the way everything is right now, you ride this ship till the end of the year. Then you go into the draft period and then the summer, knowing what everything is going to be. CJ's contract kicks in. You know what your draft position is. You know what other teams are looking like. You know what free agency is going to look like. I mean, you just have a better feel for things.
And that's fair.
At that point in time, that's when you can evaluate that kind of deal. And if you're going to move one of those guys, I think that's when you do it, is in the summertime.
That's fair. I just want this team so badly to win, man.
Not right now. Quit talking about winning right now, damn it.
No. You're right. Not right now. I'm talking about long-term in the next couple of years because there was so much positive momentum last year, Dan. This time last year.
Oh, yeah.
It was
a metric crap
much
ton.
Positivity.
There was so much.
It was just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, and it was fun. Don't get me wrong. Everybody's like, well, you didn't enjoy last year and that stretch run in the playoffs? Sure, it was fun. But I am more than willing to give up a couple months of fun for 6 years of sustained basketball success.
Yeah, you've got to figure out a way to. I mean, it's the classic lose the battle to win the war type thing. And if you're willing to forego the next 2 months basically, a month and a half, whatever we have left in the season,
26 games, whatever it is.
Yep. Yeah. So to forego that and get a top 10 pick that you could a package with Damian and CJ. And that could be your third piece. That could be your guy where you've got, Damian and CJ still have 5 or 6 years of really good basketball left. So if you have somebody that can come in and be pretty good in like 3 years,
heck, just good.
Then you're
in
talking
first
about
year.
2 to 3.
Think about Damian Lillard in his rookie year.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of like other like really, really solid rookies in the last couple of years.
You've got
Simmons isn't obviously playing.
You've got Cat. You've got Wiggins. I mean, you've got AD. I mean, you've got Cousins. You've got plenty of guys who in their first couple of years in the league, while not absolute superstars, were really good. Adding a two-way player from this draft who gives you 15-5-3 would be massive, massive for this team.
Yeah, but in order to do that,
you've got to do what you didn't do in the Orlando game, which is play the young guys and catch an L. I know I know how awful it sounds, and I know Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, all those guys, they're going to grind it out because it's in their blood, it's in their DNA. They will not lose games. They're not going out there to lose. But as an organization, you can make the choice to tank. Damian Lillard cannot play 38 minutes a game and can instead play 28.
There's strategy behind it. There's for sure strategy behind it. And I've been of this opinion too. It's like, I know you've kind of been on this banging this drum is see what you have in Myers for the rest of the season, man. And then
see
once and for all.
But I mean,
both of those guys,
there's three guys really in Vonleh, Nurk and Leonard who should be getting pretty much the lion's share of minutes at the fours and five. Vonleh's a natural tank right now with the way he's playing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it sounds awful, but it's just.
Then so be it.
Yeah. But, and then that's the natural course of it. You put these young guys. Look at Shabazz. Shabazz balled out against Orlando. 10 points.
Right, there's nothing you can do about
that. 7 boards, 6 assists. Yeah, let him do his thing. Let him grow.
Yep.
And Portland's last couple of young point guards that they brought in, Tim Frazier, Patty Mills, those guys have done pretty well for themselves.
I agree. And I think that's what you have to do. You play the younger guys, you play the guys that aren't getting minutes, and you still play Dame and CJ, you let them get their numbers, but then you kind of dip into the we're tanking, but we're still being like diplomatic
about
it.
Stealth
you
tank.
Know, like
You don't do it full on Philly style and just sit everybody and don't sign anybody to your team. It's even remotely NBA worthy. It's just
so I'm all in favor. I'm fully in favor of that. The other aspect of this that I think I have a problem with, and I'm just gonna go scorched earth on Neil O'Shea, is like, I think the Blazers organization, when I'm talking about like Terry Stotts and Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, those are like three of the better guys in the NBA. Like, they're great guys. They're super smart. Like ecstatic that those three guys like represent the franchise. But there is a larger, I think, thing here, Dan, and it has to do with Paul Allen and Neil O'Shea and some of the front office people. And it's just like he yesterday, with a straight face, Neil O'Shea got on and said that they're closer to the 50-win team that he projected than they are to the team that people are seeing right now. And it's just either he's delusional, which I find hard to believe because he's way too smart, or he's lying and trying to spin it.
It can be both.
And it can be. It just bothers me, man, because Blazer fans are some of the smartest, if not the smartest, in the NBA. And I don't think that's a stretch. They're engaged.
That's not a homer thing to say. They know basketball. I've been in numerous arenas. Portland fans understand basketball, not just the game, but the off the court front office stuff, probably better than just about anybody.
It's so demeaning, man. It's such a slap in the face to go to just say that to fans.
Worst part of it was the 6-point swing from being in the sixth seed. I mean, Kerry Eggers, who's probably one of the most measured guys in the Portland sports media. I mean, even he took shots at Olshay for that line. Like, in what convoluted sense of math does that make any sense? Maybe 6 points a game? Because, I mean, the average margin of victory is 5 in the NBA. So if you 6 points more per game, sure, yeah, you could probably be...
You'd be undefeated.
Yeah. So
you never lose.
I guess in that sense, it makes perfect sense. But, yeah, I mean, stuff like that, man, it's just... I honestly, and you and I have talked about this before, in that I'd rather him just say, you know what, and I know in business sense this makes no sense, just own it. We made a mistake. I know,
that's all it takes.
I know companies and organizations don't do that. They don't. The only one I can recall in recent memory is Domino's Pizza. Hey, Domino's, if you want to
sponsor
the show,
go ahead and hop on. And it worked out great
for them. Yeah, right? The rebranding? Hey, our pizza sucked. Hey, we read a bunch of really mean tweets and emails about how awful our product, our service, and everything was. Here's A, B, C, and D on how we're going about fixing it.
Americans love that, man. Americans love people that say...
The redemption story, right?
Yes. Hey, this sucks. We're going to get better. We're going to improve. They will give you all the leash in the world to do that. If Neil O'Shea says, hey, man, I went out there and I tried to do a bunch of deals. And
I tried to do what I thought was
right.
Tried
to get better. And it just didn't work. And we're going to make this work moving forward. And we're super excited about the draft. We're gonna build through the draft, and we're gonna get this thing in the right direction. Bingo, easy, done, right? But that's not what he does. And he treats fans like they're idiots, and that they just don't understand, and that there's this big crazy realm that exists that nobody knows how hard it is, it's just BS, man. We know exactly. Like, we've been around the NBA and we'll be fans long after you're gone of this team. I think it's exactly what it was like. I think all of us have to be realistic of what player acquisition vehicles are available to us. Yeah, we are, Neil. That's why you're hired. You're hired to overcome those. That's your job. And if you can't overcome those, then you have to structure your team in a way to maximize that. And you didn't. And that's the problem. You didn't understand Portland's limitations, and you went about structuring the team the wrong way. That's why fans are mad, is because you made bad deals. Like, it's as simple as that. When you talk about why fans are mad at Neil O'Shea, is because you gave bad contracts out. That's why. That's why fans are mad. And they're mad because you haven't been able to undo that. It's as simple as that, really.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, when you boil it down to it, that's what it comes down to. And I know there's people out there like, that want to you know, defend Neil Olshey in that he's done good things. Yes, he's done some very good things. Drafting Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Allen Crabbe, Myers Leonard, I think, is still
he's a great good, draft evaluator.
Yeah. I mean, Will Barton. I mean, you go down in a list of the guys that he's drafted, not just in Portland, but in LA too. He's very good. But that doesn't you have to decouple that from his contract negotiation and player acquisition in free agency and trades. And people will say, well, he got the Nurkic deal done. And I think that was more of a blessing than anything else in that I hate to say this, but if you look at the trades that it look favorable upon Neil Olshey, there's always some added circumstance. Chris Paul fell in his lap in Los Angeles. That's not him. That's David Stern redirecting him from the Lakers to the Clippers. I mean, that's what it is. Nurkic was not happy. I mean, he literally left a game in Denver at halftime and had to be told to come back because he knew he wasn't playing. So he wasn't happy there, and basically Denver said, we'll get you out of here. Do you think we're getting Nurkic for Mason Plumlee if he's playing really well alongside Jokic? I don't.
Not a chance, no.
I mean, just go, let's go back to Nurkic here for a little bit and kind of step away from beating the hell out of Neil Olshey. Nurkic has been really good in two games, right?
Yeah, well, he's super motivated. Like, he's been posting a bunch of stuff on social media about how it's just like a second chance, and it's a, you know, which I completely buy into.
What does that sound like to you? Sounds like a redemption story to me.
Yeah, sure does.
Right?
And fans will fall in love with
Nurkic. They're eating it alive. I'm eating it alive.
His what is it, Bosnian bear?
Bosnian beast? I'm calling him the Dancing Bear, or we can call him the Bosnian Bear. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to be 300 pounds, and let's not get it twisted, folks. He's three bills. I love how Kevin Calabro enunciates 280 pounds so just perfectly every time he says it's 280 pounds. It's like you could hear him smiling as he says it. Like oh, that's cute because Myers Leonard's listed at like 255, and you see him next to Myers.
Guys, don't.
It's like
guys just don't want to be listed over 300 pounds. There's just some sort of, there's just some weird thing there where 300 sounds just like huge.
Like it's 7 foot tall.
Still sounds reasonable.
That's a normal thing, folks. If you're 7 foot, how many 6 foot guys do you know that are under 200 pounds?
Not many.
If you're 6 foot tall, you're going to be probably two bills or more. I mean, I'm 6 foot and I'm damn near 260. That's just the kind of the way it goes. You added a foot onto me? Hell, in my best shape I was in my entire life, I was an absolute monster. I was 245 pounds. If I was a foot taller at that size, I'd be almost 400 pounds. So these guys that talk about, you look at how big and built these NBA athletes are. Yeah, these numbers are so just crazy misconstrued. It's like, it's not even close. It's like, just say it. Like, what is this thing with this size phobia? Both height and weight. Like, no, I'm not 7 foot. No, I'm not 300 pounds. Dude, you're like 7'1", 310. What are you talking about?
It is funny. I'm excited to watch him, though, because, I mean, here's some positivity for you. I think Nurkic is going to be good, and he's on a cheap deal, under $2 million. He's on his rookie deal. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be fun. And he is a guy that I would love to see develop into the starting center for the Blazers. At worst, a solid backup center. He is much more like, when we look at like potential, right, of guys, and you look at Myers and you look at Nurkic, give me Nurkic all day long over Myers, right? In terms of like potential and what they can develop into and kind of what they are right now, different ways of playing the game. But I like Nurkic's game a lot. Now, I don't think he's the answer. This is me personally as your starting center, but I think he's a really, really good backup center. Like if he's your backup, you've got a really, really good team.
I think if he figures it out defensively, and he's shown the potential. I mean, he's already blocked more shots than pretty much anybody has in Portland since Robin Lopez left. I mean, he's a solid shot blocker. He gets his hands in passing lanes. Hell, there was one play where he was reaching for the steal on one side of the lane and still managing to keep a body denying the entry pass on the other. And I was like, okay, that was pretty cool. I can go with that. The Sabonis passing, knock on... the one-handed Sabonis passing. I don't know how many people have noticed that. People have noticed his passing ability, but he has that Sabonis flair to him where he palms the ball away from everybody and then throws bullets with his offhand. And I don't know. There's something about that that I just love.
And he's excited to be here, which is great. You know, he's fired up. He's 22 years old. Yeah. So he's got, I mean, big men, like, especially him, he's just going to continue to get better
before he's prime,
which is just amazing. It's awesome that the Blazers were able to get him. And with Terry Stotts, I have no doubt that they'll be able to develop him. The thing I like about the deal, and I've just been just desperate for this as a fan, right, is I want somebody who's like tough on this team, right? And I think Nurkic can develop into a little bit of an enforcer.
Oh, he already has a little bit of work. And the thing is, it's not just to opponents either. He's doing it to his own teammates. There's been numerous times already where he's like snarled or like given a dirty look to the Blazers' perimeter defenders for not fighting through a screen or not recovering in time. Like, he's looked at him like, you know, what the blank? Get out there.
Right. And the more he can do that, and the more you kind of draw that out of him, the better. Because, like, again, we go back to Wesley Matthews, right?
You need that.
Like, you need that on the perimeter. You need one guy like that on the perimeter, and you need one guy like that down low. And they don't have it on the perimeter right now. Like, Farouk's a good defender, but I'm just talking about somebody who's tenacious and is going to get after
you.
They
get that dog in them.
Who's going to, like, D you up like Kawhi or Draymond or as dirty as he is.
Without kicking somebody in the head.
Yes, by the way, I thought his trash talk was pretty weak yesterday. I don't know what you thought of it.
The Paul Pierce line?
But, yeah.
I mean, that's...
I don't like Paul Pierce either, but...
I know, but you don't go after goats, right? Especially old goats?
Probably. That's what I'm saying. It's just like, dude, he's old. Like, if you were to say that in his
prime,
maybe,
Pierce? Yeah, I would love to see that, because people want to talk this, that about Pierce, how he's not one of the greatest ever. I'm like, he's probably a top 50 player of all time, guys.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to deny his talent.
I mean, he's hit probably more clutch shots than anybody else active in the league right now. That includes LeBron.
Yeah, he's just old, man. He's trash-talking an old dude.
Was he 38, 39? I mean...
Yeah, you're trash-talking an old dude, which is fine. It's totally derailed myself there, but all that to say is... You need a guy like Draymond. You need somebody who's going to trash talk. Like, I know CJ does, but you need an enforcer. And as much as I liked Plumlee, and he just wasn't that. The Blazers were very much of a finesse team over the last 2 years, and this
you
does
can be
a
plenty
little
of finesse,
bit.
But you need some muscle behind it,
and which they didn't have. And I think Nurkic can definitely be that guy for them.
Yeah, I'm all for it. In watching Nurkic and how he's been playing, everyone's talk about how he's had a week plus to learn the playbook and everything. He's not practicing with teammates, folks. He's down in Santa Barbara in the All-Star break, getting in shape and watching video.
Learning that was a little that way. That was a little weird. He's like, I'm gonna have to get in shape. It's like,
Well, there was no question about it. He put on weight just sitting on the bench, man. In Denver.
that's a little bit of a problem, isn't
it? Well, the crazy thing is he played almost 35 minutes last night against Orlando. I mentioned it on Twitter. Right. There's only two other times in his NBA career so far where he's played more minutes. So basically, Coach Stotts basically showed him last night, number one, get in shape. Number two, if you want the minutes and you ball out, you can have them.
It was just so funny to me. Like, when professional athletes say, and Bunker and I used to talk about this on the show, is like when athletes say, I'm going to stop eating fast food, or I'm going to stop eating candy, or I'm going to get into shape. It's like, your only job is to be in shape.
Well, you hear about some of these rookies that come into the league and what they eat, and you're like, dear God, man, like, you eat worse than I do. You're a professional athlete. How can you possibly... like everybody always asks the question, if you had, you know, all the money in the world, if you had one of these contracts, what would you do? I'd buy a house, I'd buy a car, I'd buy this, I'd go take this trip. I'm sitting here like, man, I'd hire a chef. That's like the first thing, man. Every single time. I'm like, man, I'd never cook again. I love cooking.
Some high quality food. But I'm staying with a guy right now who looks like Zac Efron. He's just, and he eats the worst food you've ever seen in your life. Just like Lamar Odom style, man. Just candy and chips and just crap food and nothing. Just,
metabolism from hell.
6% body fat. Yeah. She's like, you got to be kidding me.
I mean, that's an NBA athlete. That's exactly right. It's like, I burn 10,000 calories a day. It doesn't matter. It's like, yeah, I know, but your energy levels go to hell and everything else that goes wrong with your body. I don't know. It's just weird. But
I like the Nurkic deal.
Yeah,
I think it's good, and I think he's going to be a good player. I really do.
And I'll say this.
But not enough to make a significant difference long term. Maybe I could be wrong on that.
Let's hope down the road he makes a significant difference. But right now, let's just hope he doesn't get too many more W's wrapped up on the season.
What's the dream scenario over the next month and a half for you?
If they lost every game, I'd be thrilled. I can say that with a straight face, with kind of a smirk. Like, I want that top three pick. It's gonna be Fultz, it's gonna be Ball, and it's gonna be Jackson. Isaac may make it in there, but that's Portland has to target one of those guys.
And really, they're not that far out of being a top five pick. They're really not.
No, they were 5.5 games. 5.5. You know how easy it is to swing that?
Right. Well, last night didn't help because Orlando, they're in the running with Orlando.
No, that's why I was so disappointed. And everybody will beat me up over this, but I just don't care. The only thing that Brooklyn's... I'm invested in right now is player development. That's it for the rest of the season. Oh, yeah, Brooklyn has that worst record in the league sewn up, folks.
Yeah, they're locked up. They're not going anywhere.
So you're hoping for outside that 2 or 3 and some ping pong balls to go your way.
Yeah, I mean, Phoenix isn't going to win any games, so Phoenix will probably be – but, I mean, yeah, again, if the ping pong balls go your way, who knows? But if it just went based off record, Phoenix, L.A., but outside of that, man, yeah, the top five pick is for sure in reach.
Remember, Portland's only 4 games ahead of Los Angeles.
I know, man.
4 and that's wins. That's crazy.
I think what the trade deadline did, Dan, and the frustrated nature of the trade deadline for me yesterday was, okay, Neil Shea messed up. The contracts that he gave out were bad. There had to be a way to position themselves for the draft. This is my personal opinion, that they could have done a better job of – I know they have 3 first-round picks. I think they could have done a little more to prepare themselves for the draft. And if that means getting rid of some guys or playing some younger guys and shedding some luxury salary cap, and you don't get anything in return, I'm okay with that at this point. Because the answer moving forward isn't Allen Crabb or Myers Leonard. The answer is, what are we going to get in the draft? And positioning yourself for the draft, that's the best answer moving forward. So I think, to sum up kind of my feelings on the draft and Nurkic and everybody else, I like the Nurkic deal. I was upset at the trade deadline because I didn't think he maximized his potential in terms of preparing for the draft. And if they go on this little winning streak here and get the 8 seed, then we're really going to be like, oh, man, what a waste.
Okay. I would be remiss here if I didn't ask you what your take is on the Boogie deal. I've given mine ad nauseum at this point, so the floor is yours, good sir.
Yeah, another frustrating one. they could have gotten DeMarcus Cousins. I've zeroed out in my mind that if Neil O'Shea would have been in Vlade Divac's ear and working him, that they could have got DeMarcus Cousins and not had to give up CJ. I'm just convinced of it. I think they could have given him Allen Crabb, maybe Myers, Ed Davis, and a draft pick or two, and they could have gotten Cousins. If he would have been in his ear enough, and Cousins could have said, I don't want to be here anymore. And Vlade is just an idiot. But the fact that he went to New Orleans for that deal is a joke. And that means that deal was available to other people too. And that's, again, on Neil O'Shea, where Damian Lillard and CJ – could you imagine, Dan, if that deal happened where you've got – right now we're talking about Damian, CJ, Cousins, and then a draft pick? Are you kidding me?
The thing is, that team probably wouldn't have gotten the eighth seed. Crap. That team probably would have got the eighth seed. Not the more I think.
But who cares? But who cares? I mean – if you've got Cousins, Damian, and CJ, at that point, you can start to maneuver, and then Neil O'Shea can make that Nurkic deal and start to add little pieces here and there, and you go, yes, finally. I think the reason they don't have their core yet, they've got Damian and CJ, but they don't have their core, and so until they find that core, these other kind of ancillary deals. My take on the Cousins deal is that if Neil O'Shea is persuasive, Damian's persuasive, CJ's persuasive, if they all would have done a full court assault on Cousins and Vlade, they could have got him to Portland. That's my personal opinion. Whether that's fact or not, not sure. But my personal opinion based off knowing those guys and the deal that I just saw them make, the Kings make, they could have got him. Do you think they could have?
No. I don't think they could have. I think Vlade, or not Vlade, Vivek was obsessed by all reports with Buddy Hield. And there was nothing that was going to change their mind as far as he was concerned in getting the deal done in that direction. I think Vlade has wanted to move Cousins for a long time, in that Vivek would not let him. And he relented because of some weird obsession with Buddy Hield. And Vivek saw his opportunity, or Vlade saw his opportunity to move Boogie, and he did it. He knew that deal would get approved by Vivek, and he went with that. So that was the only, and the reason he just jumped on it was because he knew that deal would go. And there was nothing else that would preclude him from completing the deal. Where I think he could have gotten better deals from anybody else, really. I don't think...
Yeah, it's one of the worst trades ever.
I've said this before. The biggest fan of this deal right now is Sam Presti. He no longer has the dumbest trade in NBA history.
It's the worst.
I mean, it literally is the worst deal ever. Now, I've kind of posited this a little before. But what if Buddy Hield actually turned into an all-star?
Like a legit, it just still doesn't matter. Still doesn't matter.
Okay, let's
right?
say he doesn't turn into Steph, but he turns into Jimmy Butler.
There's still better deals. DeMarcus Cousins is a top five player in the league. Right? When he's engaged and ready to go.
Yeah, he's just
top
hard to
top 10.
Yeah, he's top 10. Jimmy Butler's probably top 10 this year, though, too. So, I don't know. I don't think it's likely to happen. I just kind of throw that one out there just because it would be kind of weird if we're sitting here just beating Vivek up on a million different things, and he's the one person who saw it all along.
It would be – if it just makes you scratch your head, right, where you go, all right, if that's the deal that was made, surely – there were other options out there that could have been done, but you may be right. The owner may just be obsessed with Hield because it doesn't make sense.
There's no way to explain it. Vivek was so on board with Buddy Hield, but that's the only other way it got done otherwise.
Yeah, but yeah, maybe, because you never, I mean, he's crazy. The owner, that's the same guy that thought 5-on-4 basketball was optimal.
Hey, or 4-on-5. You don't have a big enough mind to absorb it, man.
It's gonna catch on.
I'm telling you.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I feel like I was kind of negative on this podcast, man, but here's, like, I guess just to kind of sum up my thoughts on the Blazers and where things stand right now.
Well, go ahead and wrap it up this way. Go ahead and go with what you're going with, but then include what your outlook is for the closing stretch, and do you think Portland makes that eighth seed or not?
Yes, I do. I do think they make the 8 seed. I think Nurkic is going to play well. I think Damian, it all depends on his the health of Damian and CJ, of course, down the stretch. But I am not, the Kings aren't going to be there without Cousins, obviously. And I just don't trust Denver enough. They're playing, they're 4-6 in their last 10. They've lost two in a row. I don't trust Denver. So yes, I think Portland will get the 8 seed when it's all said and done. And they'll play Golden State in the playoffs. And then we'll be talking about now what, that they don't have a lottery pick. I think that's where we'll find ourselves. But the draft is the answer moving forward, because free agency is obviously off the table now. And it doesn't look like trading anybody is going to make any kind of significant impact. When I'm talking like a top 5 or 10 player, like a Butler or a Paul George or a DeMarcus Cousins, like those type of players that could potentially be out there in trade deals. I don't see it happening. So the draft is the answer moving forward. That's where we're at. That's where we're at as fans. And Paul Allen, by the way, this is another storyline that we could maybe talk about in our next podcast or at some point, for the longest time, paid a huge luxury tax. And then there was a time there where he goes, I am not paying a luxury tax anymore. Got a little taste of victory, and then Neil O'Shea talked him into, again, paying one of the top 5 salaries of the NBA, and their record doesn't even come close to matching it. You can pay for a championship team. You can pay for a team that's going to be competitive, but you're not going to pay a luxury tax for an 8 seed. So that's another wrinkle in this, too, of Paul Allen paying the luxury tax. That could shape some things moving forward, too.
Okay, so we differ on the 8th seed. I don't think Portland will get it. I don't think they should get it.
Who do you think gets it, Denver?
I think Denver holds on to it. I think they... What's funny is you and I are both kind of on the same path here in that I don't think Denver has it fully figured out, and I don't trust them, but I don't trust this Blazers team either. Like, if you ask me which team I trust more, I trust that Denver team more right now. They have more of a veteran presence on that team. And people can say that Portland has a little bit more playoff experience. Sure, but I don't know. I look at that team, and as young as Denver is, they do have some veterans on that team that have been around long enough to know what it's like, and they've got a good coach in Mike Malone and a lot of young talent that's really coming together. You get Jamal Murray and Jokic, who are looking like the future of that franchise.
I just think the schedule shapes up pretty favorably for the Blazers.
Yes, right? I think it's true for pretty much the entire division. Like the division just plays each other down the final stretch. Like the final 3 weeks is basically the Northwest Division beating the hell out of each other.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got the Suns thrown in there, the 76ers, the Nets, Pistons, Hawks. So, I mean, they can really, over their next month of basketball, like probably the next 2 or 3 weeks of basketball, they've got the Spurs. And other than that, I mean, you throw in the Thunder, but I don't think the Blazers' schedule.
I think you're looking at it through the lens of the Blazers team that closed last season when you're looking at the schedule, like, oh, yeah, they should win that game. Oh, yeah, they should win that game. How many games this year can you look at the schedule and say, oh, yeah, they should absolutely win that game? Like, maybe 10?
That's fair. Yeah, probably.
And they've probably lost a couple of those. Like, they've won games they had no business winning.
I think. Yeah, Cleveland.
I would say Cleveland. OKC, where they manhandled them here.
Yep. I thought that was going to be the turning point.
How about Boston on that road trip when they were playing like just absolute trash? Yeah, I mean,
beat them in overtime.
I mean, there's been plenty of those games, and then there's been just as many, if not more, of those games where they just completely fell apart against just crap teams. Charlotte, the game before that Boston game. That's a Charlotte team that came to Portland, and they beat by 20.
Huge disappointment.
Yeah, they've lost 19 in the last 20 or something, or 25. It's been a mess.
Yeah, Charlotte's been kind of one of those teams, too. Like, Portland's underachieved this year. Dallas is for sure underachieved this year. But, yeah, Charlotte is kind of in the – there's some big time – and then the Knicks, obviously. But Charlotte's underachieved big time in the East. So you think they make – you think they miss, huh?
Yeah, I think they'll miss it. I hope they miss it horribly. I make no qualms about that. I hope they miss it terribly. They give themselves the best possible position in the draft. And then we'll kind of go from there, because that's just more ammunition going into next season. And if they can make that happen.
What would you grade What would you grade the deadline for Neil O'Shea?
C plus, B minus.
Okay.
He made the move that he needed to make, and he capitalized on it. So I'll
give
that.
Him that.
But yep.
the reason it's downgraded
is because he put himself in that position in the first place.
Right. Yeah, you don't get credit for bailing yourself out of something you created.
Exactly.
Right?
Credit for bailing yourself out, but you're losing points for getting yourself in that hole in the first place. So.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I think we got everything.
Yeah, I think we wrap it up for here. The good news is we've got basketball back. No more awful All-Star games. I managed to make it through the entire podcast without talking about that travesty. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and wrap it here.
How to fix it hot takes?
Yeah, no, there's no fixing that crap.
No, there's...
So we'll go ahead and look at it here. We had some real basketball back finally, so got the Magic game in our belt, and we'll have a few more games between now and the next time we pod, and hopefully I'll have a voice by then too. So for Taylor Danforth, I'm Dan Morang, and this is the Trailing Blazers podcast, and thanks for listening.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.